This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
June is Youth Month. It means that we will spend some time speaking to young people, especially C-suite executives in our suit segment, really speaking to them about their lives and their careers and even nuggets that they can share, you know. And this evening we are joined by a managing director of Mitsubishi Motors South Africa. That is Thato Mahasa, who is a young gentleman. We actually will ask him how old he is. Good evening, Thato. Thank you for your time.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
No, great, thank you, man.
So, Thato, according to the South African law, you are classified as youth. Talk to us about what that looks like.
Yeah, you know, I'm just about still considered youth, I think, 34 years of age. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So youth, I think, ends at 35. So I think after next year, we'll consider that.
One more go around the sun, Thato. So let's talk about your career. You know, you are one of the youngest, you know, I think, leaders in South Africa's automotive sector. But how do you get there? Talk to us about who Thato is and where do you come from?
Yeah, so I originated in Soweto, Pretoria, born in bed there. But my family's homestead is in Northwest, from Soweto, sort of moved to the east end of Johannesburg. So I done my studying there, primary school and high school, and then went on to study at the University of Johannesburg for my tertiary qualifications. And whilst I was studying, then I entered the automotive industry in 2009. And that's where the journey began, really, for me.
So, of course, I assume that there was some sort of a ladder to climb, because you don't become country manager, you know, without doing so. So let's talk about this journey for you, you know, of really growing your career and being able to stand out and be noticed.
Yes. So, yeah, you're correct. I mean, it's just quite a long journey. If you think about it, I'm ascended to the seat in 2021, having come into the industry from 2009. And I think it was a balance of, one, some academic learnings along the way to bolster up my skill sets. I went on to do my MBA at Gibbs and then a few other courses along the way, but also taking up different opportunities both within my organization and outside. And learning as I went along, really. So I started off, obviously, sort of right at the bottom in a very general admin role. And then worked my way up, took on different roles, got more broad exposure as I went along. And yeah, and then in 2021, was appointed at Mitsubishi.
So let's talk about the usefulness of an MBA. You know, this is a controversial matter in many, many different corners of a society. When people get to a point in their lives, Thato, where they want to pursue an MBA, would you say that an MBA is useful for all careers? Or, you know, do you have to have very specific goals in mind about what you do with such a challenging and expensive, you know, pursuit?
Yeah, so I think some people enter the MBA. I remember in our first week, they asked us, you know, why are you here? Some people go into it from a networking perspective, and they're in the entrepreneurial fields, and they basically just want to build up their networks. And some actually are technical experts and want to become much more curious and into it for those particular reasons to move into other areas of management. And for myself at that point in time, it was wanting an executive level type education to build my horizon, my thinking, and how to build strategy really around businesses. Now, I think the mistake many people make is thinking that once you've got an MBA or any other undergraduate degree, you sort of automatically qualify for things. It doesn't work that way. One of my mentors once said to me that it's all MBA just proves that you can. You actually have to go out there in business and prove that you are really capable of delivering on this one sort of business objectives. And I think that's the one thing people miss, that yes, it's like a CASA, which ticks the box and says, yes, I am technically capable, but you need to get into the field and prove yourself. And that's the aspect that people might miss, I think.
And Internal marketing, I mean, internal networking. You know, we hear about networking. You say some people even went on to do an MBA for networking purposes. But I want to imagine for you, Tato, something must have had to have happened within its Mitsubishi as a company within South Africa for you to be able to be as successful as you've been. Talk to us about that, the importance of networking within the organization that you already work in.
Yeah, so I was privileged enough to work for an organization called Motus, which is the largest automotive company in the country. And it really invests into its people from a development perspective. So I studied through my company. And at the time, obviously, I sort of, after study, went on to take up different roles. And there was a point I even went into retail around 2019, 2020. Just to gather different types of sort of skill sets and experiences. And I guess when the opportunity presented itself, you know, they look around and there's only a handful of people that with the necessary experience or potential that they take up that role. And I was privileged enough to be chosen, I guess.
And then maybe we can also then speak about so what people refer to as soft skills. So it's, for instance, saying, okay, you've got this degree, you can, you know, you've worked your way around the company. So you've been exposed to this and that and that. So the technical boxes tick, but not all people, Tato, who tick the box technically are capable of leading. So let's just talk about, you know, the ability to gain soft skills that set you up for leadership.
Yeah, so one, I think you always have to surround yourself with good people. You surround yourself with good leaders and learn different aspects from them and build your own leadership style from them. I think the second thing is you have to exercise patience, especially in the corporate domain, because I think if I remember from starting in 2009 up until where I am today, there's very few people which I can point to which were my age in the company back then that are still here today. I think people like to move around a lot, and it works for some people. But for me, I prefer to really, you know, be patient, wait it out, learn, and what's due to you will come in due course.
Sorry, Tata, are you still there? I think we just lost you a little bit there. I mean,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. It's very funny. I think I was probably one of those people who was never patient, you know, in my time in corporate. And I'm keen to find out your thoughts, you know, on that, on the way in which our generation, it's a younger generation, job hops. I think my mother had two jobs the whole time I was a child. My father worked in one job for more than 40 years. It is a new way that we do things. And like you're saying, there's different strategies to it. But why do you think companies are struggling to retain us, Tato? Or could it be also just our curiosity about what could possibly be out there for us?
I think we live in a world of immediacy. Everybody wants things now. Which is great because there's a lot of hunger and a lot of drive from young people to want to grow. And I remember last year giving a talk to young sort of finance professionals, speaking about the industries and challenges in the industry. And again, it's sort of similar thing that there's a lot of people coming into the workplaces, and all of them are frustrated at the level of growth or how quickly they are ascending towards the next level. And so they move around. And when you move around a lot, you do run the risk of, one, outpricing yourself or working yourself out of the next role. Because it's really just sort of the financial benefits that people are moving for, not necessarily building the right skill sets. And that, I think, young people should be careful of, because we find people, especially when we go out into, well, not myself, but in generally when you go out into the labor market and look for skills, you find that there are very limited skills out there, right? Because people haven't spent enough time learning, understanding. They've just sort of been chasing that financial growth, which is something you've got to balance quite carefully with having a career.
Certainly does sound like something worth balancing. Tato, let's talk about mentors. Did you have anybody who held your hand, you know, saw that you were, you know, capable of a lot more than what others might have thought and really propelled you to reaching more potential?
Yes, I did. I had a few within my own family. And I was taught from a young age I remember my father used to always talk to me about the fact that when we're in Johannesburg and we go back home to Northwest, never think you are any better than anyone, because that's when you lose the learnings. So I learned from a lot of older people, and not necessarily corporate people, but people that are quite wise in how just to approach life going on. Many of my elders in Northwest and family members who are quite accomplished in their own rights as well. And within the corporate space, I can certainly point to one or two individuals where from 2009 have really been there as a mentor of sorts and provided guidance along the way. So I think one needs a balanced approach when you talk about mentorship. You need to have a few people along the line. Because it's not all about what's happening in your corporate life, it's your personal life as well. How you conduct yourself, how you carry yourself as you're building your personal career.
19:47 on Power Business. We are still speaking to Thato Magasa, the country manager or the managing director for Mitsubishi Motors South Africa. He's a younger gentleman, 34 years old, leading the South African leg of this global automotive giant. And he joins us on the line now. We spent some time speaking about his life and career as well as lessons. And now we move on to really spend some time taking a snapshot of where we are as a country. Thato, I'm wondering from your perspective, when you think of youth unemployment, what comes to mind?
Yeah, it's a bad situation, I think, in my mind. You know, when you speak about unemployment rate, this to be just over 30%. And if you consider youth unemployment, I think that someone wants to work 70%, 60-70%. So it's a dire situation. And in that, there's a specific aspect of the youth unemployment where you consider youth that are not looking for jobs or learning or developing themselves. And when you think about that quotient of people, you do worry yourself around where does the future of this country lie if you have such high youth unemployment, people not getting skills, people that are at risk of these future burdens to the success. And, of course, getting involved in things that they shouldn't be at a later stage just due to the pressures they have in their homes. I think one of the things obviously we want to see more of in this country is unemployment, but we know that although it is employment, but you know employment is a function of growth, of GDP growth as well. So we need to see some of these labor intensive industries like the auto manufacturing industries start to grow. So we can see more people employed and sort of gaining skills. I was quite encouraged just a week or two ago when I took a tour of the Ford factory. And so many young people in that factory, you know, going about working. And these are some of the industries we need to protect and also grow.
So, I mean, what do you think we're getting wrong where youth unemployment is concerned? Thato, for instance, you speak about the sector and how your sector, at least, and how it is absorbing young people. And I think every sector, you know, from finance to manufacturing, if you go to these sectors, they are doing some of it. But it's obviously not even making a dent at all in the drastic numbers that we're seeing.
So, we're seeing just a demand for tertiary education. You know, we saw movements like Fees at Four, how students desperately want to further their skills and empower themselves. And I think the second frustration comes after that and you don't get a job. That, for me, is the saddest part. And that's a function of our economy not growing. So I think that's, for me, the biggest thing to say. To fix unemployment, we really need to fix our economy. We need to have an enabling environment where companies can employ. And right now, if you think about it, we are in quite restrictive environments. You know? Things are quite tough for many industries, including the one I'm involved in, being automotive. So we're not unfortunately sort of looking to expand at the moment.
So let's talk about the automotive sector in South Africa, Thato. I've spoken to a few of your counterparts there. Some have expressed concern about our ability to be ready for EVs. I'm wondering where you fare in this regard.
Yeah, like I mentioned, we've got a big manufacturing base in this country that employs over 30,000 people and a greater component base that employs over 80,000 people. And it's an ecosystem. Now, if we do not create an enabling environment for EVs to grow in the local market, you run a risk that your manufacturing base may shrink. So there's importance for us developing EVs, not just from sort of worried about us being worried about our CO2 emissions and greenhouse gases, but also around keeping our current industries alive and afloat and being able to compete against other countries. Because as we stand now, in terms of manufacturing, people are competing against other countries. Mm. And our competitiveness as a country is reducing.
What do we make of the fact that South Africans don't seem to be keen on buying EVs, Tato? Do you think it's a matter of funding? You know, it's just too expensive, really, and a lot of them are. Or, you know, the issue of EVs hasn't been well marketed to ordinary South Africans.
Yeah, so I think firstly it's product choice, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. We don't have enough product choice, number one, in the country. Mm-hmm. And our product choice is driven just by not having an industry that's sort of ready for electric vehicles, right? Everyone who's driven an electric vehicle will tell you that there is no doubt that this is what we need to start getting into. Mm-hmm. Because the technology is great, you know, the response from the vehicle is incredible. The sort of connectivity that you can get from the vehicle is also coming on. So I think we've got no doubt that electric vehicles are something that you need going forward. But at the moment, we don't have the infrastructure to cater to electric vehicles, mm-hmm. right? So I think we're still a way off on that. And I don't think it's a consumer problem, really, rather than an environment problem. Mm-hmm. Because many of the brands can bring in EVs, which got EVs globally. We just need to make sure that they have an environment that's supporting of EVs.
And what we're also seeing is that huge export market, which South Africa, yeah. It isn't a big picture in terms of looking at it globally, but when we look at our own GDP and our own economy, it is an important aspect. Do you think it's at risk at the rate that we're going, at least? Is there a need to accelerate our interventions?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you think about where we're exporting to, we export predominantly to sort of Europe and the UK. And those countries, you know, have strict targets on when they're going to have zero emissions on vehicles. Mm. So if we are unable then to adapt our manufacturing base to be able to support those markets, you're going to wonder, where do we plan to export vehicles to? And what are those vehicles that we'll be exporting?
Now, we do have Pedro from Montana on the line who would like to, catch up with you as well, Tato. Pedro, good evening. Thank you for your time. Please do go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you very much for the opportunity to admire this gentleman. Mm-hmm. and really keep it up. My question is, the CSI of Mitsubishi, mm-hmm. in terms of developing entrepreneurship, where are you? And number two, how can Mitsubishi assist in, because you think about unemployment of youth, and how can we translate the youth to become a Matula Chetty who's respected with knowledge and experience to repair and maintain cars? Because one of the key challenges here at home is maintenance of commodities or infrastructure. You know, how do we learn that culture? Is there a possibility out there? Especially that you're a Japanese company and the Japanese are quite exceptional.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Pedro, for that question. Tato, please do go ahead and, engage Pedro.
Sure, Pedro. So I think two things. Starting with the CSI, you know, you're only as healthy as the communities in which you live. So I think, firstly, from a bank perspective, we do our fair share of CSI. Where we go out into schools and support schools sort of once a year. And also through our partners, we work together with them, such as I'm in a football club, to do various CSI initiatives as well through this. So we do a lot of that, and then we also get involved in like the Yes for Youth program and hire some youth. Every year we have an intake of youth that comes in, some get absorbed into the company, and of course some aren't able to be absorbed, and then we rotate them in a new youth if you have the following year. So that's the aspect of CSI. When it comes into the then gaining technical skills and so on, I think there's some institutions like TUT in the UJ that have started offering automated courses that are undertaken at colleges to help bring up the skills levels of technicians. Internally at Mitsubishi, we run training programs as well for young people that are coming into the dealerships to get them accredited and trained on our sort of specific levels. And once that happens, of course, they can then apply those skills on other brands as well.
Thanks for that, Tato, you know, responding to Pedro's, comment. Tato, keen to find out from you, in Youth Month, one of the criticisms that we hear often of South Africa's youth is that we're a distracted bunch, big on groove, big on social media, for instance, but not really contributing anything effectively to our economy and the dreaming of our economy. Well, a few are, but many aren't. I'm wondering if you believe this is true, and for yourself as Tato, what do you hope for South Africa? Africa's young people?
So, what we see for South African young people is that we can start having corporate can only absorb so much as the environment enables. But we start seeing young people going the entrepreneurial route as well and innovating. Innovation doesn't need to necessarily mean that I need to have a doctorate degree to learn about innovation. I can look at small pockets in which I can create something that can be useful within my community and start selling that. So small to medium businesses are the biggest employers. Mm-hmm. If we can have more young people getting into those entrepreneurial schemes, coming up with different businesses, and I know funding is always a challenge, but the more ideas we bring on board, the more we can see some innovation growing and some new industries being developed.
Well, actually, thank you so much for your time this evening, Tato. It's been a pleasure catching up with you. Well done on all your achievements and, wishing you the best in everything in the future.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. That was Tato Magasa, Managing Director of Mitsubishi Motors South Africa, a young South African gentleman from Protea in Soweto, who at 34 is leading the South African leg of Mitsubishi, which is, of course, we know is a huge player in the world's automotive sector there. We often hear that young people aren't doing as well as we should, and we'll spend this month really finding people like Tato, hearing where their mind is, their minds are in terms of the state of South Africa, and trying to learn, from their journeys. And one thing that I think was a highlight with speaking to Tato was him emphasizing that sometimes job hopping, moving from one role to another, which I know is something that a lot of millennials and Gen Zers are guilty of, is not the best option. It can be best to sit tight, wait for your turn in a place where you are, and also, to make sure that you're not outpricing yourself for your skill set, considering the fact that what job hopping does do, that it does increase your income prospects, but it doesn't always give you the foundations and the skills that you need to advance to the next level.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.